What's your definition of a good time? What would you define as an enjoyable few hours? If I would give you the choice, and I would say to you, you get to do whatever you want for the next couple hours. You get to do anything you want. So what would you do? Now, I want you to think to yourself, what would you picture in your head as being, this is the most enjoyable time. This is what I want to use my free time on. What would I want to do? If you had a few hours of your time per week to be able to do this, and instead of just once, maybe I could do a weekly thing where a few hours can be taken off and I do this, and this is the most enjoyable thing in the world. Just consider to yourself, what would it be? And really that question is, what did you do over your winter vacation? That really is one of those assignments that you usually got when you were in school. What was your winter vacation like? What did you do over winter vacation? A little thing like that. That's that. So there are some people who would answer you, right, that what they consider enjoyable would be trekking over rough terrain with a little backpack on their, you know, backpack on their back and a little thing of water right over there under a boiling sun. And they say that that's considered fun for them, right? There are people who would want to say, like, I want to run 15 miles. This is the funnest thing that I could possibly do. I would love to run 15 miles. That if I have an extra couple hours in my day, I will run. I'll just run during that time. There are some people who think that sitting in front of a TV, killing zombies from the moon would be the funnest thing that they could possibly do. That would be, by far, if I had a couple hours to kill, that I would spend my time on. There are definitely others that think that sitting in front of the TV and watching whatever show, series, movie, whatever it is that you could possibly watch, right, that would also be a fun time. If I had a couple extra hours, that's where I'd spend my time. I'd spend my time specifically on that. I've definitely met a person or two, maybe one or two people, that would want to waste their time specifically killing their brain cells, eating, drinking, or doing things like that, right, while having a fun time together with a couple other guys, right, at the same time. Others think that running up and down a field with an oblong ball inside your hand, right, while other people are trying to maim you, kill you, right, while you're doing so, some people are just slapping each other in the face, trying to get past one another, and that would be an unbelievable time. But that's an unbelievable time. And yet there are other people who think watching that would be the definition of the most unbelievable time. And considering that this Sunday is the last time to watch the oblong ball being thrown from one person to the other while people are slapping each other trying to get at other people, right? And then when somebody does have that oblong ball, the goal is to kill him. That since that is considered the most recreational pastime in American history, considering the numbers and the amount of people that are actually watching this type of a thing, especially if there's a nap involved, a possible nap involved, or commercials that go in between that make you think about things that you probably shouldn't have been thinking about in the first place, or watching things that you probably shouldn't have been watching in the first place, right? If that comes into play with all that while eating nachos and guacamole, well, if that happens to be this Sunday is the last time for that, then I think it's time for a discussion on what really should be our priorities and what is considered the greatest way of using up our time. What is that? Now, I am fully aware of the situation as well, that when a person sits there and says to himself, well, I'm only doing this to kill my time. I'm only doing this because I don't have anything to do during this time. I totally am aware and I understand that people need a recreational activity that is going to be outside of the realm of normal development. I understand that. Meaning, you need something to do that's going to be, in that word, fun. That obviously has to be there. There's no question about that. Our question is not that. That's not what we're doing right now. We're saying if you had 3 hours every day, every week, where you could do anything you want, what would you choose to do? What would you choose? What is the most fun activity that you can think of? The best thing that you can think of? Now let's go the other way. What influenced you? And whatever you have in your head right now is the funnest activity you have. You have something in your head. What influenced you to make that decision? What allowed you, as a person, to come to the point where the greatest thing that you could think of doing is that thing? What allowed you to come to formulate that opinion? Was it your heart? Was it possibly your brain? Or was it a base part of human nature that you just never fixed and allowing it to grow unfettered, allowed that thought to come to your head where you are now in that spot where you are today? So if you chose one of the above choices as one of yours or something similar to the choices that I said there, I would assume that that means you're culturally indoctrinated. What that means is that indoctrinated. I would assume what that means is that you're already in a system where you have to pull yourself out. You only watch football because it became an American pastime that people love. There is nothing intrinsically or inherently good about watching football. And I am guilty of this as well. I happen to love football. But it is only because everyone else loves it that it became such an unbelievably popular sport. I know this is crazy, but they're up to Super Bowl 50. 50 years ago, 51 years ago, there was no Super Bowl. Which means people live happy lives, good lives, without ever watching a football game. That means that that is not an intrinsically inherent need for people to love football. If they loved it, if you really did, then it would have existed forever. Arthur Morisha would have came out, and a Kurdish Baruch would have said, don't eat from that tree and play football. That would have been the second thing involved. That would be obvious, right? Because that's the greatest thing that you could possibly do. In fact, I would assume that in previous generations, this would be considered a form of torture. Where you chase around people. I would assume where a person is being forced to go from one place to the other. The only thing that doesn't make it torturous for a person like Peyton Manning is that he's getting paid $20 million. That doesn't become torturous. It is torture. It's just torture that you're willing to be paid to do. If I would pay you $20 million, would you allow yourself to get beaten up from a guy by a guy who's 200 pounds heavier than you? That's a good question. That's not for right now. But regardless, you have to think to yourself, what allowed you to come to this opinion? Would allow you to think that one of those choices is there. Again, in a different generation, in a different society, these things would not be there for you. Most of these ideas would not be there for you. And if I would ask somebody from another society what they consider fun, like soccer, and you say to me, do you like soccer? I'd ask you, do you like grass growing? Because to me, it's literally the exact same thing. I see no mila to the fact that grass is growing without people running around with a little ball there versus grass growing with a bunch of people running around with a little ball. And to me, it really makes no big difference. That to me is different because culturally I'm not grown to like soccer, so I don't like soccer. It's just not there. I couldn't even watch it as a somewhat silly sport. I couldn't even do it. It doesn't happen to me. Now, Bucher has a lot of free time, and I think we understand that. Bucher that's in a regular yeshiva definitely has a lot of free time. A Bucher who's in yeshiva that has a college has more free time. You'd be surprised. But there's no question. There's without a question, you have more free time. So think, what would be an appropriate hobby for the times when we are not able to do the things that we know we're supposed to do? What's something that could hold our attention that allows us to be able to spend our time wisely while still understanding that there's a growth mode that we need while we're in yeshiva? What allows us to really relax and feel fulfilled while we have time off? What could we do that allows this to happen? If you think that I'm going to spend the rest of the shmooz telling you that you should be learning all Beinat Sedarim wrong, all Beinat Sedarim long, you're wrong. Of course I'm not going to do that. I wish we all could, but none of us can. That's not an idea where I want you to learn for 24/7, 24 hours straight, within every day. That's not going to happen. But nonetheless, what I do want is to show that the lowest aspects of anyone's society should never be the thought process behind how I'm going to spend my time. Okay. So what is it? I am also aware of financial responsibilities that people have here. Working is good and it's productive. There's no question whatsoever. Is there any other productive thing that you can do or have done that connects you back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And if you want to say chesed, I hear it. Joining Chavirim, Chatzalah, something like that is amazing in and of itself. But I think we have to be a little bit different in our outlook, what we're going to think about when it comes to stuff like this. You're still in yeshiva. You are an adult. And you are able to make your own decisions without asking your parents or asking other people, unless you're married, and then obviously you don't make any decisions at all. Are you able to accept objectively the idea that, as a Jew, the mitzvah should be, a mitzvah that you're doing, should be the most enjoyable hobby that a person could possibly do? Are you able to accept that? Not whether it is or not. I'm not asking you whether a mitzvah is the most enjoyable thing to you. Do you accept the fact that it should be? That when we look at it, we say, well, granted, right now, doing mitzvot is not exactly my cup of tea. It is not my number one on my priority list. And doing mitzvot is not exactly the most enjoyable. If I had a couple hours off, I'm not spending it at a chesed wedding. I'm spending it doing something different. Do we understand that it should be that way? That when a person has a couple hours off, a mitzvah or a chesed or learning should be, in some way, shape, or form, should be our ultimate goal, even though it isn't right now. Are we able to accept that? Are we able to take that on and say to ourselves, this is what we want to do? Now, obviously, it's a solid investment, because we're able to get back, and you get back way more than what you're actually giving when you do the mitzvah itself, since we all believe in Olam Haba, that's a given to start off with. But aside from that, you realize that doing mitzvahs makes people feel fulfilled. You come out from doing something, then all of a sudden you feel like you accomplished something more than what you've actually done. You feel like you've done something better. You feel like you're a better person, and you are. Because doing a mitzvah does that to a person. It allows you to become greater, to become better, to become something different. You're living the ideal, and you know it. So that changes not just your system, but your whole essence, your being, who you are. You are now a person who uses his free time wisely for the right purposes. That does change quite a bit. That takes you away from a society that sways you toward your own tendencies, your own leanings to what you want to do as opposed to what other people want you to do. It's an idea of, here's what I am, here's what I can do. Now, there are many opportunities for someone like this. High Lifeline is a great example. And for those that have worked for High Lifeline or have done something, when it comes to High Lifeline, you're helping out a kid that you yourself may not have been involved with, you yourself may not know, but if you're helping out a kid who really needs that help, that's a tremendous opportunity. NCSY, the ability to connect back and to talk to other people, try to bring them back. Yachad, a kid that really has issues that are not going to go away. Now granted, all those three groups that I mentioned happen to be a little bit modern, in the sense that there are girls involved. In all three of them, a person might object to, reasonably speaking, because that's not the type of place that I want to hang out. Now, 100%, those are not the answer for everybody. But there are those answers for those who want it, and there are opportunities where you can do individually without anybody else there, where you help a person one-on-one, as opposed to being in an entire group. But let's go to the next step. What about involving yourself in something like the Chesed Fund? What about asking if the Chesed Fund needed help on a day where you had an hour off or 2 hours off, and you just say, is there anything that I can do? It's possible they'll say no. They don't know you. Right? It's possible that they don't really need any help. It's possible they don't need anything from you at all. It's going to be hard to be able to get down there, down to you, but it's still a little bit difficult to get down there. But to think to yourself, you have a day where you have a couple hours off. Either you don't have classes, or it's one of those days where, whatever it is, the yeshiva doesn't have a full yeshiva schedule for whatever reason. And you've got nothing else doing. There's only a question of something else that you could possibly do. Could you call up the Chesed Fund and say, hey, can I get involved here? Is there anything that I can do for you? So you start getting involved. I find it to be shocking, and it's so true, that when girls' parents ask me about a guy, does he do any Chesed? Granted, learning and causing the world to continue to subsist is a Chesed, in a way. But in reality, we don't practice chesed the way that we should. If we are going to go to a levaya, we're wondering if we're going to be paid for it, or if the person that whose relative passed away is going to notice that we're there. If we're a shomer for a mace, we wonder how much we're actually getting paid at the end of the day. If we decide that we're going to help at the Chesed Fund, we're wondering if somebody's going to tip us on our way out to see if we have anything. Those are not wrong ideas. They're still affected with an ulterior motive, which is not a terrible thing in and of itself. But to do an act of Chesed purely for the act of Chesed, for no other reason other than the fact that this is a Chesed, this is what a Kadosh Baruch Hu wants. How many people can say that they do this? A Chevra Kedisha, a person that works with a Chevra Kedisha, is not getting paid. He's called up all hours of the night. And when he has to do something for the Chevra Kedisha, he gets up and he goes. And there are many people in Chicago.
Many people.
You wouldn't imagine that they were part of the Kabbar Kedisha. That they were working in the Kabbar Kedisha.
You have no idea.
You just thought that they were Batwanan, who did other things, weren't spending their time in the base binders. But these guys are preparing the base for burial. They're the ones who are doing the Tahara. And there are usually Taharas almost every day, especially in a place like Chicago. You have a ton of people in Chicago, unfortunately many non-from Jews, there always is a Tahara to do. Maybe not as many as it was 20 years ago when people were still there, but it's still there. See, I know this is not a seminary. We're not learning enough to be a seminary. But nonetheless, there is something that we can do to try to get ourselves involved in some form of chesed where we can feel like we're doing something. You're living on campus with 140 high schoolers. 140 of them. And all of them need help. Every single one of them. There is not one high schooler that doesn't need a ton of help. Even if it's just as a bigger brother. You pick a guy, and every day during lunch, you just go up to him and you're like, hey, how's everything going? That's all it is. Hey, I like your shirts. I know when I speak for these different camps and I tell them, you know, I talk to the counselors and I try to tell them about how great whatever it is, I tell them, I remember being a kid in camp, and maybe you guys remember as well. You always looked up to your counselor. You always thought your counselor was a lowercase g god. You knew that he had everything going for him. And it didn't matter if the guy was the biggest nerd in the world. He was the greatest person in the world because he was your counselor. The high school does look up to you. Whether you like it or not, they look up at a person who's 19, 20, 21 years old, who's getting on with their lives, who's still learning, who's still working, who's still doing things in school, making themselves a better person. They're looking up to you. And if you acknowledge their presence, it will show right back to you. It's going to come right back. You're going to be that person they're going to ask for answers. You're going to be able to help them do things that they wouldn't have been able to do on their own. This is a pure chesed. And even though, granted, you may get something back, 99% of the time, when it's dealing with high schoolers, you will get nothing back. Nothing back. Maybe 5 years from now, maybe he'll come back to you and he'll say, hey, guess what, Cloney? You never knew, but at the time, I was thinking about going off completely. I decided to go to the Mir Yeshiva because of you, and now I'm broke. All because of you. Maybe that'll happen. Probably not. Probably not. But there's a chance. There's a chance. And when do you do this? When could you do this? Well, what are you doing during lunch? What's going on? I don't mean this as an insult or like a knockdown. That's not what I'm doing. I'm saying there is a half hour that is wide open for you to take advantage of if you're willing to take advantage of it. They're right there. They're sitting behind you. And if you don't want to deal with the senior because seniors are annoying, you don't want to deal with the junior because the juniors are probably doing things they shouldn't be doing, you don't want to deal with the sophomore because they're right in between and they're weird, go deal with the freshman. They're like this tall. You can go find one. You can take him on as your little brother, right? You can take him on and you say, like, yeah, I want to deal with you. Don't say it that way. That's weird. You say, like, I want to help you. I want to help you. I want to figure out what you could do. All of the above is regarding mitzvot. When it comes to learning Torah, there's no question. There's no question that we should be able to say there's a higher time. But I want you to look back at your life when you're 35 years old, let's say. And I want you to look back and I want you to say to yourself that I don't want you to say, I could have watched more movies. Because I know you could have. I don't know if it's possible by everybody, but I know you could have. Right? That's number one. I don't want you looking back. I don't think I know anyone that has ever said to me, I wish I would have played more basketball when I was younger, because that would make me better. I wish I would have worked out more, because now that I'm 35, right, I wish that would have been better for me. Even though it's a health thing. I don't know anybody my age that's saying that. Maybe... No. We don't know people like that who's sitting there complaining about the fact that we do this, do that, and the other. I don't even know too many people that say that I should have made more money during that time. That I should have worked harder during that time. I know a ton of people that say to me all the time, I wish I would have learned more when I was younger. Because now, I don't exactly learn Gemara in the best possible way. And now I've got a 12-year-old kid or an 11-year-old kid learning Gemara in my house. And I don't know what to tell them or how to help them. I know a ton of people like that. A ton of people who are begging me to learn with them one-on-one said they're able to help their kids with homework when they come home with Gemara homework. That I definitely know. I know a ton of people who say to me, well, I wish I would have done this when I was younger, because now that I'm older, I have no time. I'm dealing with my kids all day, I'm doing this all day, I can't go to night theater, it's hard for me to wake up early in the morning, and it's really, really difficult for me. I know a ton of people that say, if I would have built myself up when I was younger to learn, it would be a lot easier for me to learn right now. You know what I tell them? You're right. It's your fault. And then I bring them up a little bit and I help them not have the issue. But they're right. They're 100% right. They should have. And they didn't. And they messed up. I know a ton of people say, I wish I would have given more tzedakah. That I definitely know. I wish I would have given more when I had more of an opportunity to do so when I was younger and I had extra money. When I was younger and I had extra money, I could give a ton of tzedakah. That would have been easier for me now when I don't have any money because I'm paying all my money to tuition. I can barely give the tzedakah that I want to give. It's really difficult for me to be able to give the tzedakah that I did. If only I had brought myself to the point where I've been able to do so. I know tons of people like that. This is the time to be able to say to yourself, start working yourself and to make your changes. Make changes. Respectfully. Understanding who you are and what you can do and what kind of power you wield. Because you do wield a ton of power here. To be able to say to yourself, I know I can help more and I can do more and I can bring about more for the people that are around me. And I am eager to assist you. I, myself, want to be able to help you with this. Show you what to do in order to bring yourself to that point. But you have to say to yourself, what do I consider fun? Where did I get that from? How can I make something different my favorite pastime? How can I do that? How can I make it where somebody calls me up today and asks me if I can speak at a father-son learning event on Sunday afternoon from 4:30 until 9 o'clock? If I could speak sometime in between that time so that people are staying away from the game itself, how come it's a little hard, even though I haven't watched the Super Bowl in 7 years, how come it's a little hard for me to say, yeah, I'll be there? How come it's a little hard? I am going to be there. Right? Right. I'm going to do it. But it's hard. It's hard for me to say yes. Why is that? Well, we know. We have to work on ourselves. We have to push ourselves. We have to make this into a real thing, a real chesed, and help ourselves along. And as a side note, if you are looking for something specific now that you'd be able to help with, I have opportunities. There's a couple that I have right now that people came up to me with. It's available. So come up to me if you want. If not, do it on your own. But find something. Find some way to enjoy your extra time in a positive, encouraging, a good fashion. Have a good day, guys.